Community Matters. Solutions to local issues and leaders who are making a positive difference.
Hey, it's Megan from The Morning Show on Your Encouraging WPER. Thank you so much for tuning into another edition of Community Matters. This morning, we're featuring a couple of interviews. We're going to kick off with Jim Dow. He's the state director for AARP Virginia. And he's previously worked on AARP's nationwide efforts to help Americans 50 plus through projects involving everything from Social Security to stock car racing. He and his family live in Richmond, Virginia, so right within the WPER listening area. We're going to be diving in today about the cost of caregiving, so really focusing on the financial strain that family caregivers face day in, day out, and also some maybe opportunities around the bend that could help. Jim, thank you so much for joining us on the show today. And I'm actually curious, just because I know that we hear the term caregiver used frequently, but when we get down to it, what is a family caregiver and what do they do?
The simplest explanation is that a family caregiver is probably you and me. At one point or another, every one of us is going to either need a caregiver, is going to serve as a caregiver, or maybe even serving as a caregiver now. We estimate that there are about a million unpaid family caregivers here in Virginia today. You know, we're doing everything from, it could be leaving work early to take mom to the doctor. It could be helping with groceries. It could be helping balance a checkbook. But we have family caregivers that are doing things, that are, more intensive, whether it's helping someone dress or bathe. And there are some family caregivers who are responsible for doing, pretty complex medical tasks that would make, the rest of us squeamish. It's a pretty intensive labor of love for a lot of us. And the strain just mounts up both emotionally, and physically, and, based on a report that we're releasing this week, also financially.
And that's kind of what I'd like to dig into, because I know on this show before we have featured, like emotional and mental health support for caregivers, but we have not actually had a chance to address the financial constraints. So could you talk to us a little bit about that? What does that look like for the caregiver?
So AARP's research found that about 8 in 10 family caregivers spend money out of their own pocket to help pay for their loved one's needs. And on average, a family caregiver spends around $7,200 a year. And for the average caregiver, that's about a quarter of their annual take-home pay. That's a huge amount of money that we're, that we're paying out of pocket to provide care for a loved one. And that has an impact. We've heard from a lot of caregivers who, because they're spending, especially those who have like really acute caregiving responsibilities, like if their loved one has Alzheimer's or dementia, that number can go up to like $9,000 a year out of pocket. And so we hear from family caregivers that are, they're cutting back from, their own current quality of life. They're holding back on their savings. Some are pulling out of their long-term retirement savings. Some family caregivers we've heard from are even slowing down or stopping medical care because they just can't afford it. And of course, Albert Einstein said that the most powerful force in the universe is compound interest. So when you shortchange yourself now, it's going to catch up to you, and it's going to catch up to you with a wallop, both in terms of your financial security and your own health.
What kinds of resources are available to caregivers, especially if they are really strapping themselves then in order to provide for their family?
Well, I can tell you one thing that we hope will become a resource. AARP is very proudly and powerfully endorsing the Credit for Caring Act. It's a bill in Congress right now. It's a bipartisan bill, and it's really bipartisan. You don't get to say that much these days. That would help family caregivers by offering an income tax credit of up to $5,000.
Wow.
To help family caregivers offset the costs of things like, medical care or housing or transportation that they spend, in the service of their loved ones. This is not a silver bullet that's going to fix everything, but it's going to be a huge, huge resource. It's going to be a huge help for family caregivers that are just feeling the strain and perhaps in some cases buckling under it.
Can you also talk a little bit about how maybe this has shifted over the last year? So many families struggled during the COVID-19 pandemic, but I'm wondering what the effects on caregivers, was it worse? Did they get hit harder? What are some effects that you're seeing?
Caregiving, has always been pretty intensive, of course. And I think the pandemic just, shone a light on just how difficult it is under normal circumstances, and added new complexities that made it just, you know, in some cases, just tragic. You know, many family caregivers lost access to like our support services, to our support network, whether it's friends or family that we would have otherwise. A lot of us suffered from isolation. You know, I know that, you know, looking at my parents, I'm not alone in thinking, you know, in worrying, like what am I going to be bringing to my parents' house? Like if I go to visit them, and same if they have to come out. You know, and that sense of isolation, that sense of detachment is, you know, multiplied by a factor of, you know, 10 for people who have loved ones, you know, in nursing homes or other long-term care facilities. I mean, we had people that weren't able to see their loved ones, to touch their loved ones for more than a year. If you're lucky, you got to, you know, see them or talk to them through, you know, a window or a telephone screen. But, you know, that isolation is real. And of course, you know, the challenges that we've experienced with work, you know, even before the pandemic were acute, the pandemic certainly made those, you know, much worse. We heard from family caregivers, I think 6 in 10 caregivers who work said that they experienced at least one caregiving related challenge, you know, in the context of their job. So, you know, it's these are long-term problems that have been there forever. You know, they've been plaguing the backbone of our long-term care system in this country. The COVID pandemic just made it that much harder.
Now, when I picture an average caregiver in my mind, and I know that there really is no average caregiver because they range so much, but I think of someone who's like an older adult taking care of an older adult. But I understand now that caregivers really, I mean, we're spanning all sorts of generations, correct?
Oh, absolutely. All ages. And ARP put out a study a few years ago, and I think that, you know, the finding was that the average caregiver was, you know, the average caregiver that was a woman in her late 40s who had a full-time job, was spending about 21 hours a week providing care for their loved one. And let's say that that's just like, you know, amalgamation of, you know, all of them. But the truth is, like you said, it's much more complicated. You know, we've got, you know, people in their teens and 20s and 30s providing really acute care. And when we talk about the financial impacts of caregiving, I mean, they're spending out of pocket. It represents, in most cases, a much bigger chunk of their annual take-home pay. And of course, you know, we're caregivers up until, you know, up until the day we die for some of us. So, you know, people of all ages, you know, getting that acute pressure in different ways.
Yeah, just think about the younger caregiver, how they have not even maybe had an opportunity to get a career established. So yeah, that percentage of what they're taking home and how much they're contributing to that, that really can be a bigger strain. So what advice would you give for those caregivers? What resources do you have available for them that they could maybe go to find more information on where to get help?
Sure. The ARP has been helping caregivers for a while. And I would say the first and most important thing for family caregivers to know is that, you know, you're not in this alone. You don't have to invent this for yourself for the first time. You know, when we were expecting our daughter, there's tons of books at the local bookstore on what to expect when you're expecting. There isn't the same thing for, you know, what to expect when you have to take, when mom gets sick. But there are resources. I advise everyone to go to aarp.org/caregiving for things on, you know, how to take care of yourself, how to find or choose if a long-term care facility is right for your loved one. And there are financial tips. I would say that, you know, three things that right now I would encourage every family caregiver to do to make sure that they've got a handle on things. First, get their house in order. Take note of all the routine expenses that you spend for that person, especially the ones that you pay for out of pocket. Make sure that you have all the important documents like wills and insurance information in a safe and accessible place. Second, talk to your loved ones. Some of these conversations aren't going to be easy, but they're really important. You want to make sure that you have, you know, all the information that you need about their medical team and their prescriptions and their health insurance, and also their wishes for their end-of-life care and their estate. Again, really important, but, you know, often very difficult conversations. And finally, and this goes back to the report that we're releasing this week about the financial impact of caregiving, you got to make a plan for managing the money, both for yourself and for your loved one. You'll want to keep track of your own income and expenses, your loved one's budget, and what you're spending on their care. You know, at some level, these things sound like they're like they're simple, but they are definitely not easy.
Perfect. Very well said. And thank you so much. Jim, I know that we are out of time today, but I just really appreciate you taking the time to talk with us and really unpacking what is a very deep and involved and complex subject. But I appreciate the broad overview and the offer for more resources online. Thank you.
Megan, I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
For our next interview this morning, we are speaking with Courtney McCormick, corporate dietitian with Nutrisystem. And this time we're going to be talking with her about going back to the office, as many Americans are still just now returning to work, how we can sort of keep our health and nutrition at the forefront. She's going to be talking about things such as meal prep, staying healthy post-COVID, and offer some resources for those who are really trying to focus on getting their nutrition back on track. Well, Courtney, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us again, especially as I know that there's a lot of people who are facing this back to work dilemma of how do we get our nutrition and our health back on track.
Yeah, well, thank you for having me on your show. And you're right. More than a third of Americans have been working from home this past year during the pandemic, and many of us are now headed back to the office.
So I did see a statistic about, you know, the average weight gain during COVID, and it's 29 pounds. And I'm happy to say that I'm slightly less than the average, but I'm closer to the average than I really am comfortable with being. So how big of a deal, I guess, is it right now for people in terms of getting their healthy nutrition, their eating back on track?
Yeah, so, you know, that average weight gain was actually reported in a poll that came out in February from the American Psychological Association. And what they also found in that poll was that 42% of Americans reported that they really gained an undesirable amount. So they really gained more than what they really thought they, you know, or what expected, I guess, in terms of being stuck at home during mm-hmm. the lockdowns. And I think as many people are now faced with heading back to work, heading back into that office environment, people are struggling a little bit and trying to figure out how do I get back to that routine and get back to those healthy habits, and how do I shed some of those pounds that I've gained this past year.
Well, and I know that one of the basic sort of steps to making sure that you stay on track is to plan ahead. So can you talk to us a little bit about the importance of meal prep?
Yeah, so I think this is probably one of my go-to tips. I'm a huge fan of planning ahead, especially when we're trying to think about healthy habits, and planning healthy meals and meal prep is one of those critical steps in order to make sure we're setting ourselves up for success, because it just makes sure that we have those healthy options are already available. And we all know that, you know, after a long work day, we come home, we're tired, and it really helps to prevent us from, you know, driving through that drive-through if we know that we already have a healthy meal that's already planned ahead and waiting for us when we get home. So I encourage people to really think about starting meal planning and meal prepping. Thinking, you know, maybe starting small, planning one or two dinners for the week if the thought of planning, you know, seven meals for the week seems a little daunting at first. But starting small, thinking about what can you have planned and what can you prep ahead of time. So for me, I always make sure that if I know I'm having certain meals during the week that involve a lot of chopping and cutting of vegetables, I prep them ahead of time. I cut them up, I put them in Ziploc bags, so they're already, half the work is done by the time I get home, and I just have to really cook them.
So can I ask you then, because my husband and I, we're really on track with planning out and preparing for our dinners. Where I personally struggle with so much is the morning breakfast, because I get up super early in the morning. So I struggle with having my breakfasts taken care of. And also like the slump right before lunch. I'm too hungry, but it's too early for lunch. So any tips that you can give there for someone who like me is struggling with just even coming up with ideas of what to plan?
Yeah, absolutely. So for lunch, again, I always try to think about what you're preparing for your dinner and can you repurpose that into a lunch. So if you know you're cooking something like grilled chicken or, you know, we do lots of grilled fish during the summertime, I always make an extra serving of it so that I can have it the next day for lunch. And I'll usually, you know, throw it on top of a pre-made salad, or I'll toss it with some pasta that I've cooked up for the whole week that sits in my refrigerator, and I just mix a little bit of the whole grain pasta with those and add some fresh vegetables. So again, a very quick, simple lunch that you're making the night before, reusing those leftovers from dinner. And then I think for breakfast, I always think for me anyway, I tend to eat the same thing every morning for breakfast. So for me, breakfast prep is a little bit easier. And that usually includes something like I'll boil a whole dozen of hard-boiled eggs at the start of the week so that they're ready to go. Usually I'll have something like a hard-boiled egg, some fresh fruit that I can, again, cut up ahead of time, so it's already in the refrigerator prepped and cut up. It gets a little tricky with fresh fruit because I'll usually cut it up maybe for 3 days, and then at midweek I'll do it again because it starts to get a little, you know, bad in the refrigerator if you prep it ahead of time. But even things like grabbing an apple, right, something that's quick and easy. Thinking about whole grains, you could do oatmeal. I've often, you know, use oatmeal, and I'll make my own little individual bags of pre-made oatmeal, and I'll sit the bag in my bowl in the, you know, in the Ziploc bag in the bowl, so it's already ready to go in the morning. I know all I have to do is add a little bit of water and milk to it, put it in the microwave, you know, and it comes out, and I throw some nuts or some dried fruit on there, and it's ready to go. So again, I think planning ahead and just, you know, I always say start with a list. You know, sit down and write down everything you can imagine that could be a healthy breakfast, and then think about how do I plan this ahead of time, and start small. Pick one or two things, plan them ahead of time, and see how that goes, and then build on it from there.
Outside of actual food nutrition, what are some other things that we should be aware of to keep our health on the right path?
I think one of the important things is making sure we stay hydrated throughout the day. You know, I think it's important year round, but especially now during the summertime, it's really important to make sure that we're drinking adequate fluids, especially, you know, just plain water. A lot of times when we think we're hungry, it's actually we're just dehydrated and we may be thirsty. So I encourage people, you know, we should have at least 64 ounces of water a day. But really the goal for most people should be to have at least half of your body weight in ounces. You know, so if you're someone that weighs 150 pounds, that means you should be having about 75 ounces of water every day is what you should be, your goal should be. And then again, just not overlooking the importance of physical activity. You know, and I'm not saying go out there and run a 5K every day, but really just, you know, a 30-minute walk. And if you have to start small, you know, start with 5 minutes, start with 10 minutes, you know, whatever works for you just to get your body moving.
Can I also ask, just because I know you're with Nutrisystem, are there any resources that you could point us to that would help us in regards to healthy lifestyle tips, healthy eating behaviors, or maybe even healthy recipes and things that we can check out?
Yes, I definitely encourage everyone to check out our blog, The Leaf, and you can access that at leaf.nutrisystem.com. And we have lots of great tips and resources on there, lots of great lifestyle articles, things about healthy eating and fitness, and also tons of recipes. So we have hundreds of thousands of, you know, recipes that you can get on The Leaf to really start building those healthy meals.
Perfect. I don't believe that I have any other questions, but I do just like to ask every guest before we finish, is there anything that you have not had a chance to talk about that you want to make sure is covered today?
No, I think we covered pretty much everything.
Perfect. All right. Well, then I'm going to get to planning my breakfasts and lunches since I seem to have a handle on dinner. And I am going to prepare for a 30-minute walk today. I love that. Thank you, Courtney. I appreciate it.
Great. Thank you so much. And thanks again for having me on the show.
And that concludes another edition of Community Matters. Thank you once again for hanging with us today. And of course, if you'd like to hear audio from any of these interviews again, you can do so right on our website, WPER.org. Have a great day.